Well, hello there and welcome back to the Archaeology News. I am, of course, your host, David Connolly. This news is brought to you in partnership between Stone Pages and the British Archaeological Jobs and Resources website. All the stories have been collected from various sources, and so to view details in each story, including the source, please see the Stone Pages website at news.stonepages.com. So let's get started. But of course, you always want to know what I've been up to. Well, this week, I've been out searching for lost castles. Guess what? We found it. Anyway, you'll be hearing more about that, hopefully next year. So let's start with the archaeology news right now. Asphalt may have poisoned ancient Americans. There's an Alaskan dig offering a glimpse of the Ice Age and new dating techniques which are revealing a Stone Age construction boom. Are these the real King Solomon's mines? Well, you decide. Were ancient human migrations also a two-way street? Another chance for you to decide. They've also reporting on an Egyptian Neolithic site which is virtually untouched. And traces of ancient Indians are found in a Canadian lake. A Guernsey prehistoric site is to be excavated. And ancient hominid males, it seems like they stuck close to home. We have a prototype of European towns being unearthed in Bulgaria, and on a smaller level, an ancient axe head has been found in Scotland. Stone Age campsites are found in Canada, and the Marlborough Mounds. Well, this is a site in England, it turns out to be truly a prehistoric monument. Finally, we have no fresh milk for Neolithic humans in France. Sounds like it just now as well. Anyway, remember, you could be listening to this on the Stone Pages Archaeo News app, as well as keeping up with the news as it happens. So let's start off the podcast right away. On the beaches of Southern California, you can sometimes find clumps of sticky black substance called, with a texture halfway between molasses and rubber. These tar balls are made of an oily substance called bitumen, commonly used today in asphalt for road surfaces. Prehistoric people around the world use bitumen, which seeps from the ground naturally in places, to caulk the seams of ocean-going craft and for waterproofing woven baskets, even to be made into drinking vessels, as well as making casts for broken bones and poultices for sore joints. Some of California's prehistoric Chumash people even chewed bitumen like a gum. We now know that bitumen can be a source of polycyclic aromatic hydrocarbons, that's PAH, pollutants, have been linked to a number of health problems. To find out whether California's tar balls had the potential to damage the Chumash people's health, Sebastian Wormlander of Stockholm University in Sweden and his colleagues analyzed samples taken from Californian beaches and from La Brie tar pits in Los Angeles. They found the tars contained 44 PAHs, including many known carcinogens. Wormlander's team then turned to the Chumash bones to see whether the tar balls had had an effect upon their health. And studies have suggested that mothers who are exposed to PAHs during pregnancy give birth to smaller than average babies who become shorter than average adults. Well, Wormlander and his colleagues measured 269 adult skulls from burials made between 6,500 BCE and 1,780 CE on Santa Cruz and Santa Rosa Islands off California's coast. They found that over the generations, the skulls of men decreased from 3,370 to 3,180 cubic centimetres, and women's skulls decreased from 3,180 to 2,980 centimetres, that's, I should have said, cubic centimetres, of course. Previous studies have shown femur lengths declined over the period as well. The decreasing stature of the Chumash suggests a declining health, says Wormlander. Their work provides the first results that bitumen might have been a contributor to these declines. It's pretty clear that health was compromised over the time on the Californian Channel Islands, says co-author Sabrina Schultz of the University of California. Patricia Lambert of Utah State University in Logan, who studied the health of the Chumash, confirms that their stature declined over time. However, she says that the idea that bitumen poisoned the Chumash lacks direct evidence. Schultz says the team accepts their idea is still a hypothesis and that requires more evidence. That evidence may be found by analysing the bones themselves for PAHs. This is Carl Wendt of the California State University in Fullerton, who was not actually involved in the original study. If PAHs become incorporated into actual bone collagen, they should be able to extract it. I think the lesson from this is don't go around chewing bits of road. Anyway, let's move on to Alaska. Archaeologists will be continuing work at a 12,000-year-old prehistoric site called Raven Bluff this summer. Discovered in 2007 by Bureau of Land Management archaeologist Bill Hedman, the site is yielding evidence of generations of wandering hunters who camped on a bluff overlooking the Kavalina River in northwestern Alaska. What they've found is contributing new insights and contrary new evidence into the thinking on how humans spread throughout North America at the close of the Pleistocene. I would almost say, like, join the queue for that one. Essentially, the remains of a garbage dump. The dig has offered up the oldest preserved animal bone site in the American Arctic. We rarely find animal bones because they rot away so fast, notes one of the excavating archaeologists. Rapid soil accumulation, low soil acidity and perennially frozen condition at Raven Bluff has resulted in bone preservation that is not seen at any other Arctic site of this age. This dig is telling us what people were eating, what seasons they were at the site, how they were processing animals, how they carried, preserved and stored food. For example, the notion that people at this time period were bison hunters in northern Alaska is being put to the test. 12,000 years ago, what is now moist tundra was a drier, grassier landscape grazed by animals that included bison, but caribou bones are what scientists are finding at Raven Bluff. Another established scientific hypothesis being tested is how the use of certain stone tools spread in North America. The lower levels of the site produced a very significant find of a fluted projectile point base, marking the first time such a tool has been definitely dated in the north. The idea for decades has been that fluted projectile point technology originated in Alaska or perhaps Siberia and was then carried south into the Americas. This model now suggests that the Raven Bluff tool should be older than similar points found further south on the continent. However, they're finding the opposite of what people expected. The Raven Bluff points are younger than Clovis finds, so it may be that they did not originate in the north but in fact came from the south. The question is now, what does this represent as a migration of people or a spread of the ideas from the south? This is going to be a tricky one, but I like the ideas. It's an example of how archaeology is a continuation, it's a process. So there's no such thing as a fact, in a way, in archaeology, just the process of getting closer to what we hope is a truth. A computer program has been developed which uses a combination of radiocarbon dating and the sequencing of other finds on a particular site to greatly reduce the previous levels of inaccuracy in dating. This has shown that building techniques and farming spread much faster than previously thought. A prime example of this is the dating of Windmill Hill near Avebury in Wiltshire, where the margin of error in dating the site has been reduced from 600 years to only 60 years. This narrowing of the dates has had a knock-on effect insofar as they now appears to have been a building boom around about 3700 BCE, with a rash of hilltop forts and monuments spreading across the country at a rapid pace, spanning the distance between Kent and Cornwall in as little as 50 years. Together with other experts, the technique has been developed by Alex Bayliss of English Heritage and Professor Alistair Whittle of Cardiff University. Alex Bayliss explains the impact of the concertining of the actual timescales. The old techniques gave such an imprecise result that it's like taking the Napoleonic Wars, the First World War and the Second World War and the computer revolution and then insisting that they're all contemporary. Now we are actually able to narrow that down dramatically. Professor Whittle believes that with more accurate dating, the Neolithic period is no longer the sleepy, hazy swathe of time where it is the default position to lump everything together. The research fundamentally challenges the notions that little happened for our Stone Age farming ancestors. And now, a little bit of adventure. A new dig scheduled for late September 2011 could yield fresh evidence on the enduring story of King Solomon's mines. The mines in question are located at a place called Kirbit in Nahas in the Fainan district of Jordan. It's one of the largest copper mine complexes in the region. The question to be answered are twofold. One is how old the mines are, and then how does this relate to the Israelite kingdom of Solomon? Tackling the question of age, surveys and excavations carried out at Kirbit and Nahas 9 years ago placed the mining activity between 1200 and 900 BCE, backed up by high-precision radiocarbon dating, biasing analysis and other highly accurate technologies. This had pushed the previously believed occupation date back by more than 200 years. The bigger debate is how does this fit in time with the Kingdom of Solomon? The Hebrew Bible places the United Monarchy of Ancient Israel as between 1000 and 900 BCE. This view was challenged in the 1980s by a group of scholars known as the Minimalists. Well, that's a cracking name. I wish I was known as that. The various reasons they challenged that the Hebrew Bible was inaccurate and that anything recorded as occurring before 500 BCE was a fabrication. They used relative ceramic dating to back up this claim, which showed that the copper mines were no older than 700 BCE, thus making them too young for Solomon. But the main significance of the more recent dating results has put the biblical interpretation back on track. So the final piece of the puzzle, having proved that the timescales are coincident, is to find hard evidence. Project Director Thomas Levy of the University of California in San Diego is quoted as saying, "I hope that our excavations at Kirbit and Nahas will ultimately find inscriptions that will tell us about biblical characters, whether they were Edomites or early Israelite kings like David or Solomon. But that is only, currently, a hope." I have to say, you should always be careful about looking for something like that, because what you'll do is you'll find something and fit your evidence into it. Anyway, I'm sure they know what they're doing. But enjoy yourself out there. I do love Jordan, but just find what you find. Anyway, we are now going to look at ancient human migrations, two-way street. Into Georgia, another fabulous country. If you ever get a chance to go there, go on, get yourself along. Domanse, which is in the Republic of Georgia, a long-studied archaeological site in the mountainous region between Europe and Asia, was occupied by early humans as long as 1.85 million years ago, much earlier than the previous estimate of 1.7 million years ago. And at the time, as if not before, the first appearance of Homo erectus in East Africa. A research team led by Reed Ferring of the University of North Texas and David Lord Kupansky of the Georgia National Museum, I'm sorry, David, I'll just call you Dato, I'm much better at that, of the Georgia National Museum, uncovered more than 100 stone artifacts in deep layers at the site. Previously, fossil bones from a later period has been found at the site as well. The discovery of stone tools and materials from a much earlier date shows that the Caucasus region was inhabited by a sustained population, not just transitory colonists, and raises the possibility that Homo erectus evolved in Eurasia and might have migrated back to Africa. Dato calls the occupants of Domanse the first representatives of our own genus outside Africa and the most primitive population of the species Homo erectus known to date. The geographic origins of Homo erectus are still unknown. Homo erectus, heavier or more robust than modern humans and with characteristic brow ridges, has some overlap with the earlier Homo habilis and was the first of the species to spread widely outside of Africa. Now to Egypt. Only 70 kilometres from Cairo, in a nature reserve along the shore north of Lake Qumran, lies a virtually untouched Neolithic site which holds the country's oldest evidence of agriculture and could yield vital clues about the rise of pharaonic civilization. The site holds a wealth of prehistoric remains from the Middle Mesolithic period, 20,000 years ago, into the pharaonic period and later. Archaeologists say the remains of rain-based Neolithic farming in the reserve may hold vital clues to a technological leap that led to irrigation-based farming along the Nile. Shortly after the Neolithic period, irrigation began spreading along the Nile Valley. The area also contains pharaonic basalt quarries from the Old Kingdom and even fossils of whales, including one belonging to an entirely new species that swam in the region's waters 42 million years ago. The excavations are not finished, says Zahi Awas, head of the Supreme Council of Antiquities. Now, to Canada, in a discovery which pioneers a novel method of detecting the presence of ancient remains in what are now drowned landscapes. A team of Canadian scientists has used geology-style drill cores to gather evidence of toolmaking by the ancients from the bottom of an Ontario lake bottom. Led by researcher Lisa Sonnenberg of McMaster's University in Hamilton, a team took sediment samples from shallow section of a Rice Lake, a popular summer vacation spot northeast of Toronto, where people are known to have camped soon after the glaciers retreated at the end of the last ice age. Can't decide whether they're having a summer vacation as well there. Anyway, the scientists found more than 150 tiny flakes of quartz bearing telltale markings of human activity. Evidence that a submerged ancient shoreline was a site for manufacturing spear point scrapers and other tools. While looking for larger artifacts in a submerged landscape amounts to searching for a needle in a haystack, Sonnenberg said this new coring technique could be useful anywhere in the world. And in fact, if you want to see and read more about that, get yourself along to good old Past Horizons, www.pasthorizons.com, and you will find the story and the pictures up there. Now to Guernsey, which is one of the Channel Islands of the UK, where a major new excavation is being carried out ahead of work to extend a runway safety area. Dr. Philip DeJersey said the Neolithic and Bronze Age settlement, dating back to around 2,500 BCE, could provide a valuable insight into some of the island's earliest inhabitants. Dr. DeJersey said that while a number of burial sites from the same era had been discovered, this was a rare example of an early prehistoric settlement in Guernsey. We've got some good research on how our ancient ancestors were buried in their dead, but very little evidence of how they lived, he added. Pottery and flint was discovered about 65 centimetres down in some of the 16 test pits dug when their initial investigations were carried out in March 2009. Further trenches then uncovered evidence of settlement, including a number of ditches and pits, which could be associated with industrial processes. It's only archaeologists that can be excited by ditches and pits and industrial processes. Now, ancient hominid males sticking close to home. Let's learn a little bit more. A new study of the teeth of 19 Australopithecines from two famous cave sites in South Africa suggests that when it came time for members of the human family to find a mate in South Africa around about 2 million years ago, females moved away from their birthplaces far more often than the males. Lead author Sandy Copeland, a paleoanthropologist at University of Colorado at Boulder in the USA, along with her colleagues, analysed tooth enamel from two species closely related to our direct Australopithecine ancestor. The pattern held for both species. Copeland went on to say, this is the first time that direct evidence exists for dispersal patterns amongst early hominids. The findings suggest that such a patrilocal organization of social groups is ancient in human ancestors, perhaps dating back to the common ancestor we share with chimpanzees, as some researchers have now proposed. This is similar to the dispersal patterns found in chimpanzees, bonobos and many human groups, but dissimilar to that of gorillas and other primates. Copeland isn't sure why males would move less than females in a region where there are no natural barriers. She plans to see if the pattern holds in Australopithecines in other parts of Africa, to see if this was the usual way that Australopithecines organised their clans. It's not clear whether the roaming female identified in the study spent their formative years and where they did it. Now, into Bulgaria. Bulgarian archaeologists discovered what they believe to be the oldest town in Europe. Dubbed a proto-town, the site is located near the town of Pazaj. Oh, I always hate it when I get to the Pajajiz in the centre of the country. In 2008, a team of archaeologists found the area of a large ancient graveyard, which became known under the current name of the area, Yunat site. Later, the excavations were extended, and recently the researchers announced that they had found a surprisingly large settlement, which during 4,700 to 4,600 BCE spread over 100,000 square metres. The site does have all the features of an urban centre. The team has now discovered vast fortified walls. One wall is in fact 5 metres wide, and it would have been at least 5 metres high. There's a ditch, and then another defensive wall, all running alongside each other. The citadel was only the highest part of the settlement, and beyond its walls, the buildings continued. Within the walls, the archaeologists have discovered not only houses, but what is apparently a workshop centre. Settlements of this scale and planning were found only in urban centres of much later periods, such as classical antiquity. Their conclusion, therefore, has to be that we have urban planning. Well, good luck with the rest of that site. It does sound fascinating. A short one here. We have archaeologists uncovering some interesting finds at a moray dig in Scotland, just as their long-running excavation work draws to a close. Fraser Hunter's team from Edinburgh were visiting Burnie near Elgin to round off their latest project when they made some last-minute discoveries, including an ancient axe head. Now back to Canada. Evidence of a Stone Age temporary hunting and skinning camp have been found in eastern Ontario on a site destined to be used for a new housing estate. Under the Ontario Heritage Act, developers have to employ an archaeologist to survey the site before construction work begins. This particular site is located at a place called Castleman, to the east of Ottawa, on the shores of the South Nation River, which was left behind when the Champlain Sea disappeared around 8000 BCE. Finds from other sites show that the area was used over a 9,000-year period, and over 7,000 artefacts have so far been recovered from the site. When asked why they thought the quality of finds was so high, the leader of the team, who is an adjunct professor at Carleton University, believes that the contours of the land had made it unsuitable for farming, and so the ground had remained undisturbed. Dr. Jean-Luc Bilon, curator of Ontario Museum at the Canadian Museum of Civilization, believes this find to be very important indeed. And now across to England, where the Wiltshire landscape around Avebury and Silbury Hill, in southwest England that is, has become the heart of prehistoric Britain. Now we've got another monument to be added to its archaeological treasures, the Marlborough Mound. The mound, which is in the grounds of Marlborough College, was already recognised as a feature of considerable heritage and historical importance. It was a motte on which the keep of Marlborough Castle was built 50 years after the Norman Conquest, so we're around 1116 CE. Subsequently, it then became the centrepiece of a major 17th century garden. The latest research, however, has extended its history back by 3 millennia. Recent corings of the mound at Marlborough College produced 4 samples of charcoal, allowing radiocarbon dating for the first time. Samples taken from 2 boreholes through the height of the 19-metre-tall monument shows it was built originally around 2400 BCE. The first proof of the theory that the motte is largely a reused prehistoric structure of the highest national standing. Jim Leary, leader of the recent archaeological investigations for English Heritage at the nearby Silbury Hill and co-author of the recently published Story of Silbury Hill, says this is an astonishing discovery. The Marlborough Mound has been one of the biggest mysteries in the Wessex landscape for centuries. So now we have an answer. However, you won't get to see it, I'm afraid, because it's unfortunately part of college grounds, so strictly private property. Unless, of course, you become a student at Marlborough College. Now, let's go to the last story. We've got no fresh milk for Neolithic humans. Excavations at a southern French burial site from around 3000 BCE shows that the modern humans who expanded into the area of the Mediterranean lived in patrilocal communities where couples live in the man settlement and did have genetic mutation that allowed later Europeans to, did not have the genetic mutation that allowed later Europeans to digest French milk. Scientists analysed DNA extracted from the bones of 53 people buried in Cave 1 of Trélez, located in the Grande Cosse region at Saint-Jean-et-Saint-Paul Aviron near, well, just like Milau in France. They were able to get useful information from 29 of the samples, 22 men and 2 women, and 5 whom it was impossible to determine the sex of. Most appear to be closely related, with 2 having a 99.9979% probability, that's pretty close, of being father and son, and 2 others having a 99.9985% probability of being siblings. Researchers deduce that the peoples of this region of France were of a genetic type that closely relates to the Basque Spanish populations more than the current Western European population. They were also more closely related to the people in Cyprus, Portugal, Turkey, Italy and Lebanon. None carried the gene for lactose persistence. It is believed to have evolved around about 5,500 BCE in Central Europe, and which allowed humans to drink fresh milk after they were weaned. The absence of the genetic variation probably shows that the Trailers people came from an agricultural, pastoral Mediterranean culture that drank fermented milk and had an economy based on sheep and goat farming. Well, that was fascinating, that one. Don't forget, of course, to get along to www.stonepages.com/app so that you can listen to this all on your iPhone, iPod Touch and iPad. Can I also remind you all about the fabulous PastHorizons.com, which, if I have to be honest, just gets better and better every day. And remember, you can find more at stonepagesnews.stonepages.com. Thanks so much for listening to Archaeology News. We definitely hope you'll return again to us for the next episode.